26 minutes before the hour, morning air on Relevant Radio on Monday, June 8th, 2015. The Drinking with the Saints Guide to Happy Hour. No kidding. Drinking with the Saints. The Sinner's Guide to a Happy Holy Hour. Yes, it is a faith-filled book. We'll get to that coming up this half hour on Morning Air. John and Glenn spending time with Father Gene Hemrick, who joins us here on Relevant Radio on a regular basis. Father Gene is the director of the National Institute for the Renewal of the Priesthood and a research associate with the Institute for Policy Research and Catholic Studies. He is at the Catholic University in Washington, D.C., and that's where he's joining us live this morning. Hi, Father Gene. How are you?
Real fine, thank you. How about yourself?
We're doing great. You know, we just had Bishop Tobin on. He's celebrating 10 years of shepherding the Diocese of Providence, and we were talking about vocations. He's had 10 men who've been ordained to the priesthood in the last few days, and we were just thinking, you know, this would be a good time to talk about seminary education and what a person needs and what is the formation in becoming a priest. And we thought, we know somebody who can answer that question, Father Gene.
Yeah, oh, thank you. I will try. Yes.
So, no, you know, young men, and, you know, I think if you're, especially if you're a cradle Catholic and, you know, a baby boomer, you know, we were evangelized, you know, pretty heavily both in seventh grade and eighth grade and through high school to think about becoming a priest. And really for any Catholic family, it really is a moral obligation for the parents to talk with their sons about perhaps becoming a priest as well. Take us through the formation process. And, you know, it's one thing to talk about it. It's another thing to actually go through that and be blessed and to follow that calling, that calling from the Holy Spirit, from God. What did you go through in your formation to become a priest?
Well, first of all, I'd like to just say that when I went to the seminary, it was a time in which most of us were from immigrant parents. So we had the Irish and especially the Polish in Chicago. And many of my classmates, their parents were from the old country. My grandfather was from the old country. Also, my grandmother was from Ireland. So we had that background, as it were, when we came into the seminary. The schools were run by the sisters, and God, they did a wonderful job. They were very, very good at that. And then it was a different time than it is now. We had seminarians all over the place. It was a great glut of seminary in my own class, which was just a blessing. But it was the times we were in. As you remember, there were a great deal of movies that portrayed, you know, priests in a very good light, and it was very inspiring. And I think that had a lot to do with the vocations, plus the fact that coming from immigrant parents, there was always a vocation coming out of there because they also were very big families. And it was always nice to have a son or a daughter go into religious life. So those were the times we were in. And I started off at the age of 13 going into Quigley Seminary in Chicago. And when I say going in, I lived in the suburbs of Glen Ellyn, and I used to take the train in. It took 3 hours round trip in and out that get to school. And in those days, we had 5 years of high school, 1 year to prepare us for the major seminary. And during those days at high school, you would think, well, high school seminary, you think of a seminary as sort of enclosed and, you know, sort of almost monastic. No, it was anything like that. It was right down there on the Rush Street Strip, which is one of the most wonderful places for restaurants and whatever. And it was right downtown near the Magnificent Mile. So every day going to school, you really got a real taste of life. It is all of it. And, of course, taking the train in with the business people and early up in the morning, 5:30 in the morning, sitting in there and then taking actually 3 trains before I got to the seminary. But also my classmates were doing the same thing. So that was the times we were in. And then the courses we took were a little bit more than the ordinary high school student. We had enough courses after 3 years to go right into the university across the street, which was Loyola, which some guys did. They didn't feel that it was necessary to go on to the seminary, and they went over there and they had enough credits. We were very heavy into the liberal arts, very heavy into languages. So we started off the first year with Latin, then came Greek, and then depending on your background, I had a German background, Italian background, we were also encouraged, we had to take a course in the language that was our background. I took German. So many of my classmates took Polish. It was one of those requirements in the seminary at the time. And then there were the other courses. But the thing about the courses were that they were taught by priests who were from the Diocese of Chicago, the archdiocese there. They were really down-to-earth men. All of them were very, and I look back on it now and think, what a blessing. They were a joy to be with. They were upbeat, well-informed, and they liked their work. And so we were taught by some very devoted priests at the time. And the education we got was very good. I mean, it was very, very good. I look back, I still use my Greek, I still use my Latin, I still use the German, and all the other things that they taught us. But there was also this formation, and that's another part of seminary life. And when I say formation, I mean this, that when you start at the year, you start with a retreat, and then every so often, a day of recollection. So that was built in to the whole system. And then when I went to the major seminary, which was Mundelein, St. Mary of the Lake, there formation was even stronger. We got up at 5:25 every morning. That was the Vox Dei, the voice of God waking us. And somebody would come around and knock on your door and say, Benedictus Domine, let us bless the Lord, and you say, Deo gratias. And that was the beginning of the morning. You had about 15-20 minutes to get ready in the chapel, half hour of meditation beforehand, and the meditation was set up the night before. We had the Jesuits, and they would come in and they gave us what they call points, and what it was, something to meditate on the next morning, and they would set it up Jesuit style, using the Ignatian spirituality. So then we would get in that chapel, we would meditate for a half hour, and then there was Mass. And then right after Mass, again, a little meditation, then off to the refectory, at breakfast, a little break, back to your room, study, go to classes. At noon, back into chapel again. And there, again, we would pray noonday prayers and then have our lunch. Sometimes, I'm going to say sometimes it was regular. I think it was every Tuesday or whatever day it was. There was reading in the refectory, so there was no talking. And often they were very good readings, and sometimes of saints that who had done some outstanding works in their life. So we had that silence there every so often in the, it was regular too, in the refectory. Afternoon, you did your two courses, then recreation. And interestingly, when you're in sort of a monastic situation like that, when guys got out on the ball field, I mean, they let it go. It was really something else because they were all bound up, and all of a sudden now they could go out. Okay, recreation's over. Come back. You had to get into the building, into your room before the bell rang. So 5 o'clock was the end of it. You had to be in your room by then. That was the rule. And then at, I think it was 5:15, back in the chapel again. And again, readings. And we sat there and did our meditation and dinner. And then after dinner, a little rich recreation, and back in your room to study. And at 9:30, lights out. And when you went back into your room, we had what they call a great silence. So once you were in the building, and once you were in the room, there was no talking. You were not allowed to, you know, talk to other people or visit anybody else's rooms. And that was a routine for 7 years. Straightforward. We did that without any interruption.
Early and on, Father Gene, let me just ask you a quick question because we're running out of time and you've got so many, just made me think of so many questions. We were having conversation with Father Robert Barron over at Mundelein, and also just recently with Archbishop Myers when we dedicated our studios in the Archdiocese of Newark building. And he just ordained to a couple of dozen young men to the priesthood a couple of weeks ago. And the same thing with Bishop DiMarzio in Brooklyn. They just ordained a number. And they all say the same thing. These young men could have anything that they want in this secular world. And they have chosen a life to shepherd us. They've chosen a life in the priesthood. When as they go into seminary, they're basically having the same structure, the same day, the same immersion that you did.
Mm-hmm. It is similar, but not quite as monastic as when we went through the seminary. We were really following a Roman system. But yes, it is very similar. They have their retreats, the formation that goes with them. What is going on now in the seminary, which I like very much, we were tied into the seminary. I mean, we were within the walls of the seminary.
Yeah.
You can get out. Nowadays, these young men are given some pastoral work to do. So they'll maybe work in a hospital, or they'll go out and work in a neighborhood. They're doing a lot more of that now, which gives them more hands-on pastoral work while they're being formed in the seminary. We did not get that. That was not a given at that time. So I must commend what's going on there now. And then too, in the summers, many of these seminarians, they travel, not only here in this country, but other countries, and they work in maybe Guatemala or wherever they're sent. So they're getting a little bit more of the world. Also, the age of seminarians. I was in charge of the studies on seminarians, and when we were in the seminary, we were all homogeneous. We were all the same age. We came into this major seminary at the age of 17 or 18. Everybody there was of the same age. Nowadays, it's totally different. I've watched those numbers, and gee, I think the last time I looked at them was like 35 was the median age, maybe even more than that. That changes the whole complexion of teaching. I don't want to get too technical here, but when you teach a younger person, it's pedagogy. You're putting ideas into the mind of that person. When you have older men who have been in business or second, third career, which we have many now, that's a totally different way of teaching. They call it andragogic teaching. You start with their knowledge and you build on it rather than trying to pour ideas into them.
Yeah.
So you've got a different type of person coming out of the seminary in that respect. That's
a good point. We should, only because we're just running up against the clock, we should follow up on that, because you raise a good point with the median age of seminarians going up. In the Diocese of Bridgeport, Connecticut, they will ordain in 3 weeks, two Saturdays from now, the oldest man being ordained in the United States at age 64. Being ordained to the priesthood, I never thought about the challenges that are involved, because it's not one size fits all, is it?
No, not anymore. It is pretty much across the board. I mean, we had a person in our diocese in Joliet. I think he was in his 70s when they ordained him.
Wow.
It was a while, too.
Wow. Yeah, and I know there's somebody that I worked with in television whose wife passed away, and, he went into seminary. He's now the pastor of a parish outside of New Orleans, Louisiana, who's, about the same age. My spiritual director, his wife passed when he was 59. She was in her late 50s. He had three kids. He went into the seminary, and he's been a priest now for 20 years. Yeah, so that'll be the topic, if you don't mind us holding you over for the next time you come on to talk a little bit more about older vocations. Would you mind doing that?
Oh, no. We've been studying it, and I'm very familiar with all of the ins and outs of it, and there's quite a bit of change in that respect.
Good. Yeah. Father Gene Hemrick is the director of the National Institute for the Renewal of the Priesthood and a research associate with the Institute for Policy Research and Catholic Studies at the Catholic University of America, joining us live from Washington, D.C. this morning. Father Gene, always a pleasure. We'll continue our conversation very soon. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Father Gene Hemrick here at 12 before the hour. We'll go drinking with the saints next on Morning Air on Relevant Radio.